Hi there, I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today. I want to first start today's program talking a little bit about the recent solar eclipse. So, a lot of places, a lot of media, a lot of people were talking about it. I'm not sure if you got to see it through your special eclipse glasses or through a pinhole cereal box or whatever funky thing you might have created to view it, or maybe you were in a place where there was only a partial eclipse, or maybe you were in a place where the eclipse wasn't happening at all. But it seemed to bring out a lot of excitement and a lot of awe. A lot of awe. And it is a fascinating thing where we realize, number one, that we're living on a spinning mass, the planet Earth, and that planet is spinning around a giant fireball. And then to add to that, we've got this spinning satellite that runs around our spinning mass once a day. And the eclipse makes us kind of think about what's going on, things that we take for granted every day. So in some ways, I appreciated that people were making a big deal about it, that people were in awe of what was happening. People were celebrating it and going out of their way. Some people traveled a long way to be able to see a total eclipse if it wasn't happening as a total event where they live. But what I want to bring up is that I think we should really be in awe every moment. Think about it. Like I just described, we're living on this spinning mass that's going around this spinning ball of fire. And the whole concept is crazy. It's incomprehensible. It's so much more profound than any human mind can take in. And then think about who we are, who you are, who I am. We're just little momentary specks in this grand universe, and we don't know why we're here. We don't know what we're supposed to be doing, but we are here. And so, I encourage being mindful all the time, staying in that state of awe as often as you can, and keeping the perspective. The eclipse is just like a wake-up call. I think, when I've been in a place that has an earthquake, that's like another wake-up call. It's like, oh yeah, I'm not standing on solid ground. Anything can happen at any moment. So my question for you right now is, how are you feeling right now in this moment? In just this moment, not what just happened a few moments ago or what you think may happen in a few moments to come, just right now. Right now, I'm feeling pretty good. I have a nice glass of cold pressed jasmine tea. I'm going to sip. I went for a long walk. We've been doing a lot of regular walks. I especially like doing these walks when it's really warm out because it gets a lot of the sweat going, and I feel like it's a way to detox all of the things that I've taken in that perhaps I didn't want to take in. And you can eat as healthy as you want, but in this environment that we're in, this precious, awesome environment, there are still things that can enter into your body through breathing, through drinking, through eating, of course, and just through your pores. And some of that stuff is good, and some of that stuff may not be so good. So having your body able to cleanse all of that is good, and I feel cleansed and full of awe. And I hope you're feeling well. I do. Okay, so in this moment, one of the things I wanted to talk about, I didn't get finish talking about last week, was a restaurant I got to take advantage of last week. And it made me think I'll talk about a few restaurants that are not vegan or vegetarian, but offer, either intentionally or not, foods that we can eat, we who want to eat plants. So last week, I took my 12-year-old niece and my 10-year-old nephew and a friend of mine in from San Francisco and her 7-year-old son, and me and Gary, we went to a place called Friedman's in Manhattan. I think there are 4 of them. They're a chain. And they cater to those who must eat gluten-free. It's not a completely gluten-free restaurant. But when I checked the menu, I wanted to make sure that everybody would have something to eat, and we did. And what I loved about it was every server knew what was in the food, and they knew how careful they had to be not to expose people to gluten who absolutely can't have it, like my niece who has celiac disease. And I really appreciate that. And I think you only see that in places, businesses that are started with a passion or a mission. And what I read from their website is there was someone with celiac disease who encouraged the creation of this restaurant. And that's what you need. You need someone with a passion or a mission, not just to make money. And I prefer to take advantage of those places that have a goal that is helpful to the community. Okay, then we were invited to an engagement party that we went to Saturday night at Brother Jimmy's Barbecue in White Plains. And I have to confess that when I first got the invitation, I was a little hesitant, Brother Jimmy's Barbecue. But I emailed them, and I got a very positive response. First of all, I'm excited when anybody answers my emails from a business. And they answered right away, and they said, no problem, they can take care of me. And then when we got to the party, it was fantastic. It was some very old friends, their daughters engaged. It was full of love. And they had already planned to have a number of food selections for everyone. And they knew there'd be some vegans there. So there was a wonderful salad. There was this Brussels sprout dish that was fantastic. And then they told me there was a little butter in the string beans, and they would make me some steamed string beans. But what I love about this, okay, they're not a vegan restaurant. But number one, they are aware that there are vegans on the planet, and they know how to accommodate us. And this is a brand new world. This is really encouraging. I love when I see that. Now, there are plenty of restaurants that are not like that. But I'm excited to go to places like that and give them my money and give them my support when they're moving in a progressive fashion in a positive way. So that was Brother Jimmy's Barbecue in White Plains. And then just the other day, I went to Ruby Tuesday. Have you been to one of their chains? Ruby Tuesday, they're a multinational corporation, and they have restaurants all over the country. They're considered a casual American dining restaurant where they have American food. And I went there because I was with my parents, and they wanted to go, and my dad had read they had a salad bar, and my mother was interested in a salad bar. Lovely. And we had a pretty good time there. The air conditioning was exceptionally strong, and we were freezing. I never quite understand why some places have to be so cold. But that's another topic. What I wanted to talk about Ruby Tuesday is under a greater theme called the true cost of food. So at Ruby Tuesday, they're offering a new special, and you should take advantage of it if you can. $13.99, you can get a three-course meal. My parents got the petite sirloin with potato and the unlimited salad bar and a dessert of chocolate layer cake and ice cream for $13.99. Now, I went for the unlimited salad bar, and it was pretty good. They had kale and a number of different greens, corn, black beans, edamame, artichoke. There's supposed to be 50 ingredients on this salad bar. It was $10.99. And I just kept thinking to myself, how can a restaurant make money on a three-course meal of $13.99? I mean, how did they do that? How did they pay for the space? How did they pay for the air conditioning? How do they do it? And so I'm thinking of a lot of things. Number one, the service was fair. And I'm not blaming any of the employees. There just weren't enough of them. And they were running around trying to accommodate everyone. And when I did a little searching, I learned a number of things. So if you happen to be a salaried server at this restaurant, your average salary is around $19,000. And I just wonder how people do on a salary that's low, and they have to work hard. And then you compare the CEO of this company, who's pulling in about $2 million with salary and stock dividends and other things. The difference is 100 times different. And I ask myself, how is that? I mean, what is the CEO doing that is 100 times more valuable than the people that are working and moving and hustling and sweating and doing most of the work? And it's a fascinating thing in our capitalistic society, because most businesses operate that way, where the few upper management are making a gazillion dollars and all the worker bees are making barely a livable wage, barely, if at all. And then they charge a three-course meal for $13.99. It just doesn't add up. Anyway, and you have to know, I'm certain that the food that they're serving has to be the lowest quality, the lowest cost available in order to sell it at such a price. And that means highly subsidized meats and dairy foods. I'm not ordering any of those, but that's what they're offering. And you know that we pay for those meats and dairy foods with our tax dollars. So we could actually have a reduction in our taxes if you're looking for tax reductions by not supporting these industries. But there's just so much to this picture that I thought was wrong. And that's what casual American dining is all about today in America. Do you like Ruby Tuesday? Have you been there? Do you like their new garden salad bar? I'm glad they've got a garden salad bar. Everybody should have access to unlimited salads. That's great. And my parents, they both had their nice salads. That was great. It's just the picture, the entire picture. It just doesn't add up. That's Ruby Tuesday. Okay. Another strange thing that's going on, I don't know if you're following it. I've talked about Hampton Foods a number of times on this program. We've also done a video on Hampton Foods and their mayo product, Just Mayo. Now, we have recipes at responsibilityandliving.com. It's easy to make your own mayo. I'm not calling it mayonnaise because according to the FDA, mayonnaise has to have egg in it. But you can make a salad dressing or a food product that tastes like mayonnaise without using eggs. And there are a number of companies that do it. There's Veginaise. There's Trader Joe's has one that's vegan. There's a lot of companies now have them. But Just Foods is the one that keeps getting all the press. And recently, Target had taken off the Just Mayo products that they had on their shelves because they had heard that they may be contaminated. And then we learned that they weren't, that somebody had put out, had sent them a letter or information, and it wasn't from any official source. Okay, and so Hampton Foods was cleared. And now we're learning that Target's just decided, no, we don't want to stock this product on their shelves. And I just ask myself, what is really going on here? It's almost like there's kind of some conspiracy going on where some of the big ag, the big food companies don't want these vegan businesses to succeed. When Just Mayo first started getting some traction, Unilever lost it. They lost it so badly that they sued Just Mayo. Now, Unilever makes Best Foods mayonnaise and Hellmann's mayonnaise, and they didn't like the competition. And in the end, they dropped the suit and they decided to make their own vegan mayo. If you can't beat them, join them, right? But this mayo story continues, and it's sensational. Now, you know, can we talk about Just Mayo a little bit more? Now, I love vegan companies, and I think we should have more of them. The thing that I don't understand, oh, I do understand, actually, is the Just Mayo product. I'm reading on their website, the ingredients. There's no magic here to what's in their product. The stuff that's in their mayo products are in lots of different salad dressing related products. They use canola oil, water. They use different flavorings. They have xanthan gum, vinegar, tamari sauce, lemon juice. Mostly good food products. They do have some preservatives like calcium disodium EDTA. But there's nothing really high tech seemingly about this product. And I remember when Hampton Foods first came out, they attracted a lot of investors with their concept that they were going to replace the animal egg in industrial foods and use a plant egg. And they had all of these scientists figuring out how to make a plant product that had the same characteristics as an egg so that you could use them in industrial foods. And a lot of investors were interested in it. And ultimately, I'm looking at their Just Mayo product, and it doesn't look really any different or high tech than any other vegan mayo products. So I'm wondering, is it just hype? Just marketing? I don't know. But I do know that in order for a food business to succeed, it really takes a lot. It takes a lot of funding, it takes a lot of marketing, it takes a lot of cleverness, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best product or even a good product. People can be convinced to consume just about anything. And we see that all the time. I recently published a couple of articles on the Responsible Eating and Living website. And I wanted to tell you about them. I am promoting a couple of Dr. Furman supplement products, and I wanted to tell you why. So I was asked to by the people that help promote Dr. Furman's products, and they have two supplements out. One is called Immune Biotech, and the other is Dr. Furman's DHA EPA. And before I was asked to write about these products, I was already trying a different DHA EPA. And I'm doing it because there's not a lot of science out there, but I feel everything we know and what we're hearing about with regard to dementia and Alzheimer's. I want to do whatever I can to keep my brain healthy and fat. Now, we know that our brains consist of a lot of fat. And I feel that supplementing with DHA, EPA is a good thing to do. I did try another brand. I'm not going to say which one it is. But I didn't care for it because it was flavored with stevia. You say stevia, I say stevia. No, I say stevia and you say stevia. I learned a long time ago it's supposed to be pronounced stevia, but we all say stevia. Whatever, you know what I mean. These DHA EPA liquids, they're made of algae. And other people sometimes supplement with fish oil to get their DHA EPA. So this DHA EPA that's made of algae, it also has somewhat of a fishy flavor. And I don't think a savory fishy flavor goes very well with sugar or any sugar-like substance like an artificial sugar or stevia. Oh, it's horrible. The Dr. Furman's version has a light lemony flavor, lemongrass, actually. Anyway, it's not cheap. It's an expensive product. But the more people around me, I know a very close friend who is a year older than me, has serious Alzheimer's. And a lot of older people around me have mild dementia and serious Alzheimer's. And it's not a fun disease at all. So in my journey of trying to live as healthily as I can, quality life, and keeping my head together, I'm currently supplementing with DHA, EPA, and I wanted you to know about that. So I have one article about that. And then the other one is about the immune biotech, which is a nice combination of berries, astragalus, and a number of concentrated mushroom powders. And when I was going through my cancer treatment over 10 years ago, I searched for different products that I knew would help boost my immune system and help in my healing. And I was taking astragalus, which has been shown to shrink tumors, and mushrooms I call natural chemotherapy. So this is a great place to get it all in one. I continue to eat my mushrooms and enjoy my mushrooms as well. I hope you do too. So there are two products that you may consider. I think I mentioned this last week. I'm going to mention it again. My nonprofit website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. I hope you've been there. I hope you visit often. We try and put a lot of information up there that is helpful and free to use. We have apps, and our Apple iPhone app had disappeared for a while. I didn't even know it, but the app is back. So I hope you'll go there, responsibleeatingandliving.com. You can download the app, and then it's really easy to access the website anytime you want to. Isn't that nice? I think it's nice. I'm trying to put this into words. So, a lot of people want to lose weight. You know, it's a thing. We have access to all kinds of food, all kinds of unhealthy food, cheap food. We talked earlier about all that cheap food that is not really cheap. And I didn't even mention when I was talking about the true cost of food that cheap food we ultimately pay for later. We pay for it in added weight. We pay for it in compromised health, because when we're eating that cheap food of petite sirloins and ice cream and whipped creams and all kinds of sugar and bread products, etc., then we are much higher risk of getting diabetes and heart disease and Alzheimer's and all of those things. And that helps the pharmaceutical industry. It doesn't really help you. So there are many costs to cheap food and costs to our environment as well and to our society. So, you know, for those that struggle with weight, you know, I understand how difficult it is because we are manipulated as a society. We are manipulated to choose the wrong foods. And in some places, in food deserts, as we call them, people don't even have access to healthy foods. At least at Ruby Tuesdays, now they have the Garden Bar, which is a good thing. But, you know, it takes effort. And, you know, I can understand that no one really appreciates fat shaming. That's a terrible thing. But if you truly want something, if you truly want to be loved, if you truly want to reach a goal or achieve something, be it losing weight or anything else, it absolutely has to come from you. It has to come from within. Many people can come up with all kinds of tips and reasons why, because of society or genes or the food you eat, you can come up with all kinds of excuses. But change happens from within. And at responsibilityandliving.com, we want to help everybody that we possibly can. I have people that write in all the time and, you know, I give them tips, but I can't do it for you. You have to do it yourself. You know, we like to provide inspiration. But I want you to know that for this brief time that we have on Earth, this brief time where we're living on this spinning mass around this big ball of fire, we really should make the most of it and work hard and do the best that we can to be the best that we can. So I want to leave you with that. And if you have comments and questions, you can send me an email at info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. Okay. And now we're going to take a little break. And then when we come back, I'm going to bring on my guest, Stacey Murphy, and we're going to talk about growing your own vegetables. I'm really excited about this. So let's take a quick break.
PRN.FM, your station for progressive viewpoints on politics, economics, health, the environment, and a whole lot more. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Have you ever listened to Anthony Robbins, watched the movie called The Secret, or read about the power of positive thinking from the perspective of any of the many fine authors who have written about the subject? They all focus on the law of attraction, which governs every second of every life of every person in the universe. Like attracts like, and everything you do, feel, and think about as a regular way of being determines your life experiences. PRN's new show, LOA Today, explores all aspects of this magnificent law of the universe every Thursday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. Join hosts Walt Thiessen and Ioana June Thiessen as we explore the law of attraction each week. That's LOA Today, Thursday evenings from 7 to 8 p.m. here on PRN.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Bring it back to part two of It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass. I've had a moment to sip my cold-pressed jasmine tea. And can we talk about cold-pressed tea for a minute? I know I've talked about it before. I just want to remind you it's like the best and easiest thing on the planet, especially on a hot day. So I learned a while ago from Dr. Greger in his book, How Not to Die, that the wonderful antioxidant antioxidants that we get in teas like black tea and green tea and white tea. They're even better when we cold brew our tea rather than adding hot water or boiling water to it. So now what I do is I put my tea in a little stainless steel basket and put that in a large wide mouth glass jar. It fits in really nicely, and I pour the water over it, put it in the refrigerator. In a little while, I have really lovely tea, and I find it tastes even better. Somehow you don't get the bitter flavors that you sometimes get with tea, and you only get the sweetness. So here's to you. That's good. All right, let's move on. My guest is Stacy Murphy, and she has helped thousands of new gardeners from six continents grow vegetables and herbs in small spaces, so they can enjoy fresh, affordable vegetables while creating a more sustainable future. She walks eager growers through her holistic garden system, showing what to grow, when, and where. Stacy is a garden geek, growing food since 1979, and her superpower is packing literally tons of food into tight spaces. Dozens of her students who have trained at her backyard urban farm in Brooklyn have gone on to start their own homesteads, gardens, and farms. Featured on Martha Stewart Radio and PBS's Growing a Greener World, Stacy believes growing food organically is the best health plan for people, communities, and the earth. And you can find her at growyourownvegetables.org. And don't forget to sign up to receive her best gardening tips and strategies. I won't forget. Stacy, how are you?
I'm awesome. And I wish I had made some cold brew tea so I could enjoy some with you right now.
Oh, great. Here's to you.
Awesome. Have you ever tried it straight from the garden?
You mean the tea straight from the garden?
Harvest some herbs straight from the garden?
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. I love, you know, I lived in the south of France in the early 90s. And they like to make a lot of thyme tea.
Oh, yeah.
And fresh thyme, it just would grow wild in the local woods. Oh.
Just heaven.
And another thing I'm doing, you know, it's the simplest thing, and I get so much joy about it. But we were recently at this new restaurant called PS Kitchen in Manhattan. It's a new vegan restaurant. And what they did in the bottled water, that it's just bottled tap water or bottled filtered tap water, is they put a sprig of mint in the water. And wow, it's fantastic.
Yeah, so much more refreshing. And
just a little sprig.
Yeah. And you know, it's crazy because it doesn't take that much space or effort to grow your own herbs on your windowsill even. Mm-hmm. You know? If you're in New York City and you don't have any space to grow, but you have a window that faces the sun, in about 6 linear feet, you can grow all of your herbs for the year. It's amazing. And then you could have cold brewed tea every day of the year.
And a lot more.
Exactly. Exactly.
A lot more. So how would we grow herbs on a windowsill?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first important piece is you do need the sun. Without the sun, you got nothing. It's
yeah, you know, I was just talking about the sun in the first half of this program and the eclipse and how everybody was so in awe. And I want to remind people again in the second part, we need to be in awe every moment that the sun is out there. It's incomprehensible and amazing, and we needed to grow herbs.
All right. And I mean, essentially, photosynthesis is like a miracle, you know, sunshine and carbon dioxide, the plant converts that to sugar and it grows plants from that sugar. And then basically you get that fresh food. Oh, man, so important to have that sunlight. So if you're going to grow herbs, sun, you want at least 6 hours of sun if you want a lot of herbs to grow. And so the way to test that is on a nice sunny day, sit in your room near that window and just mark every hour. Is it in sun or is it in shade? And if you have 6 hours where it is in sun, then you could grow herbs on your windowsill.
That's a really good tip.
Yeah.
And I know that you're full of really good tips.
It's messed up.
You know, the thing about growing food, whether you're just growing a few herbs on your windowsill or more in a garden or you have a farm, it brings out so many important things. People are so separated from who we are, what we are, where our food comes, what it is, what it takes. And when you see life just spurt out from a seed, I think it helps ground you and helps you come back to that appreciation and awe that we all should have every day.
Yeah. I've had students that have said the most earth-shattering things to me with their experience on the farm. So I started a youth farm in Brooklyn. And for any listeners who are in or near Brooklyn, you got to go visit it. It's amazing. It's 1 acre on the front lawn of 5 high schools. And those kids, they're learning how to grow food, and it's changing their lives. The first thing is that it's growing your place. I mean, you're actually changing the face of the planet. It's kind of surreal when you think about it, that you are changing the face of the planet when you garden. And I mean, this is a little bit on the heavier side of things, but I think people will understand why it's so important to understand this. Compost holds so many lessons for us about the life cycle of everything and the place in the world. And I had one student who, we were learning how to compost in the fall. He threw his orange into the compost bin. And then in the spring, we came out and I pointed to the pile and I said, "There's the compost, let's go put it on the beds." And the kid looked at me and said, "Where's my orange?" And I said, "It's in there." And he's like, "But it's all dirt." And I said, "Yeah, it disintegrated, it decomposed. Remember, we talked about this and this is what it looks like." And he said, "Oh my gosh, I get it." He's like, "Dust to dust, ashes to ashes." He's like, "I get it." And he just like had this moment where he came to terms with the preciousness of life and all of the cycles of life. It was incredible. It was unbelievable.
I love when people just get it. So when did you just get it, Stacey?
I led a very enchanted childhood. I grew up in the suburbs of Detroit, and my mom, bless her, it was the 70s, and she was on a tight budget. My parents were both teachers, and they were doing everything they could for us. So they decided to garden in order to get some food because our budget was so tight. And I grew up in between rows of giant snap peas and tomato bushes and blackberry bushes. And I would just sit outside and pick things off the vine and eat them. It was unbelievable.
And that's the way it should be.
I want that for every kid. It's why it's so important for us to pass this on from generation to generation, to learn how to garden if you don't already. And if your kids, time is so precious with kids because they grow out of the phase so quickly of being involved in nature, and just, you know, starting that gardening bug early is so important.
I know. It's there are so many ways to garden, and I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing. So how other than a windowsill, what does it take to grow in a small space?
Yeah, awesome. It's absolutely less space and less time and effort than you think. I'll just say that, because most people, when they think about growing food, they think it takes a lot of energy and a lot of space. And really, when you have about 100 square feet, which if you think about the size of like an SUV, the ground space that is underneath that SUV is, how big is that? That's close to 100 square feet. It's a little bit smaller, but about that size. You can grow the vegetables and herbs that you need for your family. So let's just make a distinction here that vegetables, most of them don't need a lot of space. and herbs don't need a whole lot of space at all. So you won't be growing things like necessarily like corn or soybeans at a really large scale, but you can grow all of your greens, you can grow all of your tomatoes and eggplant and pepper and all of your herbs and your zucchini in a space that's about 100 square feet.
And those vegetables tend to be the pricier ones in the supermarket.
I mean, yeah, especially things like tomatoes, and the homegrown, they're going to taste so much better off the vine. You can't even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you've had a number of different programs to help people get started and get better at what they're doing. And can you tell us what some of those have been and are?
Yeah, sure. And I just wanted to preface this with, you know, when you get started growing food, there's kind of three stages. There's the stage where you're just an absolute newbie. You've never done anything. You're just interested and you've never planted a seed. And it's going to be at that stage, you're going to feel probably a little intimidated by the sheer amount of garden knowledge that is available on the internet. And, you know, where do you get started? And then there's a second stage, which is like you've tried to garden and maybe you've had some success, but on the most part, you just feel like you're not getting anywhere. And then there's a third stage where you start to feel comfortable. And then basically you want to double your yield. You want to know how to like to amp it up, right? And so I have an online course called Grow Your Own Vegetables, and it really goes through all those different stages. Anybody can enter. And they basically, when they end the program, they're in the next phase, and they can retake the program in that next phase and jump to the, you know, the third phase, so to speak. So there's a big spectrum of growers, and I just want to make sure everybody understands that it takes a little bit of patience to learn how to gardening. In the end, it's going to be easy, and you're going to be shocked at how little time it takes to garden. But when you're just getting started, it's going to take some time, just like when we're babies and we're trying to learn how to speak, you know, in this way, we're trying to communicate with plants. So my classes really help people. They work through my system, my garden system. And what it does is it helps them speak to nature and communicate to nature so that they can work with nature so that wherever they are, plants are going to thrive. So that's a little bit about the course. And so lately I've been teaching a lot of online courses, and there's still lots of really great resources in Brooklyn and in New York as well for in-person events that I'm no longer there in person. I'm more around the world at this point. But if you go to the youth farm, and I don't know the website for that off the top of my head, but there are amazing workshops there in person as well, and opportunities to intern if you have a free summer and you want to go and spend some time there as well.
That's good. I like the idea of communicating with plants. And, you know, I think we're here to learn. And it's my intention to just keep learning and learning until it's time for me to disintegrate and go back into the earth and whatever that cycle is, ashes to ashes, et cetera. but it's like crawling, walking, running. And as I talk about all the time about finding your kitchen, it's the skills to cook. It's not hard. It just takes a little time to get familiar, to get your hands used to the few skills that you need to put a dish together. And I'm sure growing food is like that because it's in our DNA. This is what we're supposed to be doing.
It's so right? Basic, right? We need food. We need shelter. And
yeah, I know.
I was going to say, yeah, I think it's part of our birthright, you know, to work with nature to grow some food for ourselves, but also to ensure that the earth has a healthy future. I mean, the earth is going to go on without us.
That's right. That's absolutely right. We don't have to save the earth. We're just talking about making life livable for our species, which, you know, some would debate that that's maybe not even a good mission.
We won't go there.
We won't go there, not today. We'll go there another day.
Yeah.
But growing your vegetables is a fun and important thing to do.
And I wanted to add to that, that one of the things that I thought was so amazing about growing in Brooklyn was that the community that I lived in was very rich culturally. Lots of West Indian populations, Dominican Republic, Jamaican, Haitian, all different groups of people who had come to the United States. And it's incredible how you can connect over food. And I think it's also one of our being here on this planet means that we have a cultural heritage that we communicate with our ancestors through food as well. And those traditions are so rich. And the crops that we grew in Brooklyn were very specific, some of them, to the people who were in the neighborhood who wanted those foods. So if you can garden, you can grow varieties that are from your hometown or your home country. You can grow them where you are so that you can bring your cultural heritage back into your kitchen, even if they don't have it at the farmer's market. That's what's so powerful, I think, about gardening, is these special varieties. You know, even in Brooklyn, we could grow some of the crops that mm-hmm. people would consider tropical crops.
Now, right now it's late August. So if somebody wanted to start gardening, is there a good time of year to get started?
I like to say that it's always a good time to start. It's today. I can hear that it's truck in the background.
Okay.
Wouldn't it be amazing if the ice cream truck had garden fresh?
Oh gosh. You know that truck comes around a little too often, and it always comes around during this show. So I always put out a silent wish or a wish out loud that one day that truck is going to have these luscious treats made from strawberries and almonds and dates all blended up together, maybe even added a little kale in there to give some nutrients, but nutritious, good treats.
Yeah.
I can dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not my theme song, folks.
It's pretty ironic, but it's awesome. So what I was saying is it's always a good time to start. Now is a great time to start. So what's amazing about Mother Nature is that it's cyclical and there's always a fresh start. So you can actually grow indoors even if it's winter time and it's too cold to grow outside. So there's always something you can grow. And so if you really want it, you can make it happen. So if you're, let's say it's cold outside and nothing's going to grow, you can sprout pea shoots, sunflower shoots. Those are super expensive at the store and you can grow them really inexpensively. You can also sprout lentils and some other really interesting things. So you could do that indoors in little jars, little mason jars, and it doesn't take much time or effort. It takes about 10 days total, sometimes less, sometimes 7 days. So that's something that you can do when it's cold out. If you have 28 days between now and your first cold snap of the year, you can grow lettuce and radish and spinach and some other things.
28 days?
Yeah, 28 days. And then there's longer maturing crops. You know, beets are a little bit longer, and then tomatoes are a lot longer. You know, they might be more like 60 days to ripening, and you really need hot for that. So basically, there within growing, there is, people talk about the cold weather crops and the warm weather crops. And for people in the tropical regions, there's also like hot crops. Mm-hmm. And so as long as you're picking crops that are going to mature in the time frame that you have available, it's never too late to grow.
It's never too late or too early.
Yeah, that's true too.
To grow. Well, that's good. So if anybody out there is inspired, you can get started right now.
Yeah.
And maybe checking out growyourownvegetables.org will help you.
Definitely.
Give you that extra kick in the butt, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you, have you have you invented anything on your own in gardening, or discovered anything on your own, or maybe had some kind of garden epiphany?
I would say it's somewhere in between epiphany and, well, I'll just talk about it then. We can try to put a word.
Call it what we want.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Two things. I mean, one is the plants. I talked about this, that we're communicating with plants, right? And communicating with nature. It's so incredible when you're standing in your garden and you realize that the oxygen that you're exhaling is the carbon dioxide that you're exhaling is the carbon dioxide that the plants are turning into their food, and they're exhaling oxygen for you. There's this moment when you're standing in your garden and you realize the powerful connection that you have to those plants and the amount of wisdom that you can tap into just by watching your plants and how they respond and using your intuition for what they need. And I definitely think that talking to plants and playing music for plants, all of those things that promote those interactions between species are things that the plants feel and that in return we feel. So that, I don't think that's a new idea by any means. I think that there's lots of people studying that. But the moment that you feel it in your body and you're realizing that what you're exhaling is what the plants need, there is a feeling of empowerment that you can do this, that you've got it, that you, it doesn't matter if you know everything in the world, mm-hmm. all you really need to know is this connection to this plant. So that's something that I really want everybody to experience once in their life. It's a beautiful moment.
And all you have to do is what I do for a living, which is breathe.
Exactly. It's incredible. It's so powerful. And then, you know, beyond that, so that for some people, that's kind of woo-woo. That's like, I don't know about that. I don't know if I can really feel that in my body. But the science behind it is the other side. So I benefited from the knowledge of dozens of organic farmers that have come before me. Oh my goodness. Organic farmers are some of the least respected people I know in terms of, you know, how people value what they do and how they talk about farmers sometimes is really sad, how they treat farmers. So I learned so much from organic farmers. And the thing that makes what I do unique is that I'm able to communicate a system that farmers have used for years in a really simple way to new gardeners so that they can take all of that knowledge and basically use it to just crush it in the garden and get tons of food and really simply. So I credit so many organic farmers that I've worked with because what they have shared with me in terms of the science and their process, I've basically taken that and simplified it for the home gardeners. So you're getting like the most up-to-date research in farming when you work with me.
Beautiful. Yeah. Do you have a favorite that comes up out of the ground and always gives you the most joy?
Oh my goodness.
Well, you love all of your plant children equally.
I like to think I love them all equally, but if I were to look at my garden right now, I would have to say that it's always been basil.
Mm.
Whenever I garden, it's everywhere because it's one of my favorites. And there are so many varieties of basil. I happen to be Italian, but my favorite variety of basil is Tulsi basil, which is some people call it holy basil from India. And it's got incredible medicinal qualities. It helps you adapt to stress. It has a sturdier quality to it than the Italian basils. And so when you make pesto from it, it's really like charged. It's really chewy and it has an extra impact in it. I have to say that it isn't present in the lighter weight, thin leaves.
Has more muscle.
Yeah. And I love both. Don't get me wrong. I love mm-hmm. both. But I have to say, probably basil in general is my favorite. It's aromatic. It flowers. The bees love it. It's a pollinator. It produces a habitat for beneficial insects. So it does all of these wonderful things for your garden. And it tastes good in tea. It tastes good on top of food.
yes, I love basil. I just love smelling it like a bouquet of basil.
Yeah, right?
It's fantastic. Yes.
We call that food for the soul.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing and helping so many people to grow their own vegetables. We need to be doing that as much as we can in every nook and cranny that we can find to grow food. I really believe that that is so important, and to also, as much as we can, take our reliance off of big ag, the big farms that are growing food in these unsustainable ways, and they're not growing quality food, and they're poisoning our soils and our water and our air. We need to take that back, folks, and we do it. We can do it first in our own small spaces.
Yep, and keep in mind, it does not take nearly as much effort, space, or time than you think.
Okay, we're going to hold you to that, Stacey.
Awesome.
Okay, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food. Everybody visit growyourownvegetables.org. Whew. Okay, we just have like a minute or two left. And I wanted to tell you, next week we're going to continue on this theme. And I'm bringing back Wild Man Steve Brill. He was on this program about 7 years ago. And he'll be on the show with his daughter, Violet. And they'll be talking about edible medicinal wild plants and mushrooms that you can forage, plus hands-on environmental education for kids. And he's a lot of fun and very knowledgeable. And he's gotten into a bit of trouble, too. And that's always kind of fun to hear about. Sometimes we have to take risks when we want to do things that are right and important and just and good. And you heard it all here. Thank you for joining me. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to it. It's All About Food. Join me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Don't forget to download our free app and have a delicious week.